from the Kodach Sanya. I want to thank Dr. and Mrs. Pollack for sponsoring today, and I thank the whole Kollel for all the work that went into it, particularly Katz. Worked very, very hard from start to finish, including putting together these beautiful booklets. Not easy at all. And Nat Sims, who drove literally through the whole night so that we could have extravagant breakfast this morning. He's going right back to New York right now after this year. Fine. So let's go through the halacha quickly. So in terms of the source of this whole idea of not competing, really what we call it Hasagas Gvul, talking about competition. It's talking about moving a fence between your a property marker in Eretz Yisrael to move your property marker over so that your field comes to include your neighbor's field. According to many opinions, only applies in Eretz Yisrael. The use of that term when it comes to encroaching in somebody else's business appears to be borrowed, although there are those opinions that appear to take it literally, that it's somehow included in that. Probably, it's most likely, according to most opinions, a borrowed term. Doesn't really apply to that. It's an unusual form of damage. Usually in financial cases and damages, I'm literally destroying my friend's property. Here, I'm not really doing anything to his property directly. I'm actually operating in my own property, and it's not even like where I have a fire that's making smoke that's damaging my neighbor next door. I'm not even really hurting what's his. I'm preventing something that would come to him from coming to him. In this case, livelihood. I'm preventing business that might otherwise come to him from coming to him. Nonetheless, it is aser, as we saw in some of the sources here. It's one of the 11 things that David HaMelech, ethical behaviors that David HaMelech exhorted us to be careful about, not cutting into our friend's parnasa. The Chassam Sofer, which was included in the sources, the Chassam Sofer is of the opinion that it's a deraisa, and it's included in a concept that the Torah told Chazal, that Ben Ishu Ben Geroy, that Chazal were told, make laws that allow for peaceful coexistence and proper coexistence between people. No specifics, it's up to Chachamim, figure out what's necessary. And then they went and made ordinances, this amongst them, according to the Chassam Sofer, that fall under that Torah commandment with all the ramifications of being a Torah commandment to not allow competition in a way that's destructive and damaging. Very interesting and very beautiful. The Chazan Ish writes that really all our parnasa is set from Rosh Hashanah, and so really there shouldn't be any limitations on competition at all. Because what's the difference? You could open up a Walmart next door to some rinky-dink little store, and if this guy was supposed to have parnasa from Rosh Hashanah, it's not going to hurt him one penny. Chazon Ish says all these laws about not competing is all just hishtadlus, this idea that Hashem wants us to go through the motions as if we're doing things. So part of going through the motions or pretending we're involved in our parnasa is not competing with each other. But really, a person's parnasa is set from Rosh Hashanah and it has zero ramification. Really a beautiful and accurate and Torah true way of looking at it. Fine. The Gemara that we discuss in Bava Basra, this is the principal Gemara on the topic, discusses two major cases. One is opening up a flour mill in proximity to an existing flour mill, a business, opening up a competing business. There, there's a machlokes in the Gemara. Rav Huna is stringent, and he says that the first business has a right to complain and prevent the second business from opening because he can say, you're cutting into my livelihood, I'm going to have less business, and it could be, you could track it, you'll look at his books, and you'll see that his profit went down, you say, look, you're costing me profit, I have a right to stop you. Excuse me, Rav Huna Brady Yeshua argues, and he says that at the very least, if they're both residents of the same neighborhood, then he can say, I'm opening my store in my property, you're opening your store in your property, customers can go wherever they want. If they go to you, they go to you. If they go to me, they go to me, and I can't prevent you. That's the lenient opinion. Rav Huna, the son of Rabbi Yeshua. Fine, that's one case. The next case the Gemara discusses is a fisherman spreading fishing nets in proximity to where another fisherman had already set up his nets. That, the Gemara says, is for sure a problem. Even according to the lenient opinion earlier that says that you're allowed to compete in a store, but the fisherman is worse. And the Gemara says a reason why. The Gemara says because the fish send out scouts. So there's actually a three-way machlokas with practical ramifications. What the Gemara means. What is it about fish that's worse than competing stores. And then, based on how you understand that, it doesn't apply only to fish. Based on where you stand, it applies to many other things, and we'll see some of that. Rashi learns that what's special about fish is that the fisherman has this thing down to a system. He knows where the fish live. He knows, he invests money and effort into putting down the bait, and the fish come every day. He knows 100%, as close to 100% as possible, that he's going to have these fish, because it's just, that's how it works, like clockwork. And when the competing fisherman comes in and takes these fish that he was counting on, that's what the Gemara means. Whereas in contrast to business, to customers, where you don't know where a customer's going to go. He go here, he go there. But the fisherman, he knows there. He's sure that these fish are his. It's a done deal. And then you come in and swoop in and set up your nets and take the fish that were a done deal for me. That's what the Gemara says is a problem, according to Rashi.
Does the Gemara not hold, who was the Chaznish who said the whole thing about Rosh Hashanah?
Yeah.
Like the Gemara, no one else talks about that besides the Chaznish? Like, it seems like that's an important issue that sort of
The halacha reflects our responsibility to conduct ourselves with a certain illusion of it's us doing it. So we conduct ourselves that way. Chazish is just pointing out that it's nothing more than an illusion. Don't believe that someone competing is actually...
Because of midos? Like, I shouldn't come and steal some type of thing, even though...
No, that's...
the same thing about stealing. If I steal from you, you still can have the same amount of money you would have had, but I'm not allowed to steal because it's not a...
That's the way Hashem wants. He wants us to even protest against it because we have a responsibility to conduct ourselves in keeping with that. It's a bigger discussion, but we have to act a certain way because that's what Hashem wants. Hashem doesn't want to do open miracles. It would be an open miracle if everybody let everybody do whatever they want to them and walk over them and they would still come home at the end of the day with the same amount of money. It would be an open nace. Hashem doesn't want that. So we go through the illusion. We go through the motions, and we say. And we follow, and the halachas are accordingly. So that's our rationale. The Muki Yosef learns that the problem is that the fish will actually go into his net, the first fisherman, and then they'll leave his net to go get food from the second one's net. And you're actually taking fish that were actually caught by the first one. That might be real stealing. And then the Rimigash was also in our sources. The Rimigash understands that what makes the fish worse is that by setting up a new net here, you actually spook the fish. The fish spies see that there's trouble in these waters, and they flee, and you totally undermine my parnasa. In other words, if you would take some of my fish, I would have gotten 100 fish, now I get 50. That wouldn't be a problem, according to the Rimigash. And the same thing is true with the store. If I would have gotten 100 customers, now I get 50. Same thing, not a problem. The issue is that by setting up your competing fishing nets, you run the risk of completely obliterating my business, and that's a problem. Okay, those are the two major opinions that follow through in halacha are the Rashi and the Rimigash. Rashi, that when it's a sure bet, you can't take away my customer, and the Rimigash, that if you're totally obliterating his business, we'll see more about that too, but according to the Rimigash, if you're doing something that will totally undermine my business, then, and you're literally going in and scooping out my business, then it's a problem. Okay, now the halacha. So the halacha follows.
The Rimigash, that means the second guy is not really gaining either. He doesn't even, right?
He may.
Unless he had no business, now he's having a tiny business.
I don't know how the fish psychology works, but even if he does, even if he somehow does, but if somehow, you know, you got the existence of all these traps around, somehow make them spook from the area, and if you happen to get some fish, but I have a right to prevent you from doing something that could undermine my business. Okay, so halacha follows that, like the lenient opinion, Rehuna Brei Yeshua, that if you're a local, you can compete. Now, defining local is complicated, like we see in the Gemara. If you live in the same neighborhood, you're for sure a local. If you're in the same city but different neighborhoods, the Gemara is not sure. The halacha is that we're stringent, but how that applies nowadays with the structure of our cities, I'm not sure about. From a different city, that's clear you cannot compete. So it's not so uncommon. You know, people live in Muncie and Passaic, and they go into Brooklyn to work. If you live in one of these cities and you travel into a different city to open up your own business, competing with locals, taking other factors out of the picture, it's a problem. If you're not a local, you can't compete. Now, the Gemara says that if you pay local taxes, you could. The poskim point out that the structure of our taxes are very different than the structure of the taxes that the Gemara is referring to. So you really have to ask a Rav how it applies. Really, anytime you open a business, you're going to pay local taxes. So
is it, Has he ever? So if I live in Muncie and I go to the Brooklyn to open a business, right? Yeah. So if let's say I wasn't paying the taxes though, and I opened up another pizza shop, let's say in Brooklyn,
right?
And there's 3 billion people in Brooklyn, and there's enough pizza shops, there's enough people for everyone to survive. Even though that's the case, I'm not really stealing anyone's business because.
That might be okay. That's what I said, taking away
other... It seems like it might be... If you're saying the halacha is, if I'm from a different town, if I'm not paying taxes, I'm not allowed to. Maybe I'm not allowed to anyway.
Because you're not paying taxes.
I'm not... If the halacha is, I'm not allowed to go from my town to someone else's town to open a business.
No, we'll see.
Is it only because I'm stealing business or because I'm not allowed to go to another town unless I'm paying taxes?
It's the first one. It's the first one. We'll see. It probably wouldn't apply there because of what you said. We'll get there.
No.
Right. That's really discussed in the Gemara, pretty much. That case.
Would it depend on the owner or what about the employees? Let's say... I live in New York and I want to visit a different city.
Yeah.
But I'm going to hire my employees from that who are local.
Doesn't help. We'll see more about partnerships, but if they're just employees, it's your business, you can't really, you don't have a right to, you're the one competing, you don't have a right to do that.
Does business have to be, if I send salespeople from Brooklyn to Manhattan and they're soliciting business that comes back to me in Brooklyn, is that the same thing as opening up a business?
There.
If you send your emissaries to bring business back,
you're still like taking.
Yeah, I would assume that it is like said, like doing business.
The same
there, I would
as
assume.
Opening up a business.
Why should it make a difference whether or not it's local?
If you're local,
yeah.
The argument of Huna Rav Yeshua is that part of my rights as a resident is to conduct business in my place of living, and if that happens to cause you to lose some business, that's not my problem. But to go in and swoop into somewhere else and compete, that's outside of my rights as a resident. Part of your rights to compete are that it's your right to conduct business in your residence.
I mean, along with what Robert was saying, the whole idea of making an online business.
We'll get to online. That's different. But yeah, it depends on the. All right, that would be different. Probably we'll see. Okay, now if the business is operated by partners. One of the partners is local and one of them is from out of town. So, Poskim talk about that it needs to be that the partnership requires the participation of the local partner. So if it's just like you're giving all the money and you get some local guy to sign the papers and he's irrelevant in the partnership, it doesn't really work. They say it's a hard thing to really calculate how this works, but he needs to be a necessary part of the partnership in order to really have the rights to open this business. Really, like he's opening the business in his place, and he needs your help. But if he's irrelevant to the whole thing, then it's really the primary partner who's doing it, and you have no right to compete. Okay, now, interesting discussion also in the sources. The post can talk about opening a competing store in the mouth of a dead end, like a cul-de-sac, an alleyway. So the Avi Yosef that the Mordechai quotes is stringent. He says you can't open a competing business at the mouth, competing with a business at the back of the alley when you're in the front of the alley. So the Beis Yosef understands that, okay, he's passing like the stringent opinion in the Gemara that you're not allowed to compete. We, says the Beis Yosef, we don't passkin like that. We passkin, all the later authorities passkin like the lenient opinion, you're allowed to compete locally. So, doesn't apply. But the Ramah argues, and he says that's not the right understanding. Even the lenient opinion holds that opening up a business at the mouth of a dead end that competes with a business inside is not allowed because it completely destroys the parnasa. When you have two businesses next to each other, so you'll get some customers, I'll get some customers. But when everybody has to walk past my store to get to your store, they'll all stop, they're not going to get past my store, and in the greatest likelihood is that I will all but obliterate your parnasa. And that comes out a very practical thing, that even when you're allowed to compete, and negatively impact the income of the person you're competing with, that's only where he's still around. And when you wipe him out, it's a problem. Now, how do you define that? That's an interesting discussion. I did see one opinion that defines destroying Parnassa as at the point where the store is not worth maintaining anymore, the business isn't worth operating anymore. But I think it's different. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that, it doesn't mean that, I think it's different. Rav Moshe says that anytime if the person will be earning less, will no longer be able to afford what the average person can afford in his generation or in his society, that's called destroying his parnasa. So he may still be earning, maybe the business isn't even be worth it, he's still making a profit, but he won't be able to afford what an average person can afford where he could have previously. So that's called you've destroyed his parnasa. I don't think so. No, the Rimigash sounds like the Ramah. Right. All right. I don't think they're Talia Abba. Those two opinions seem to be overlapped, though. Yeah.
Can you point to Moshe, a poor person could open a business in competition with a rich person?
It depends on how it'll affect the rich person's income.
You have to look at his assets and if losing the business would affect him.
Yeah, that's the point. Because really, the competition is fair competition. There's an additional condition that if as a result of your competing, you'll destroy his livelihood. So if you're not, then you're not.
And it also explains the Chafetz Chaim, why he kept closing his store when he got the stores, because he knew everyone would go to him. He trusted him, right? I mean, he felt that was probably going to destroy their business enough that everyone's going to come to him.
It could be. That would make sense. The Chassam Sofer points out that because of that, There's a distinction between a storefront and an office. If I understood it correctly, if you have a storefront, then if you have a hardware store, and then inside the alley is another hardware store, no one's going to walk past the first hardware store to go to the inner one. 99% of the people will stop at the first one and buy whatever they buy. But if you have an office that's like doesn't have a storefront, it's not in everyone's face. So just because you're located towards the front of the alley, not necessarily will everybody come into you. So it only applies where the nature of the setup of the businesses is such that you're really going to destroy the person's income. Okay, the next subject is pursuing other people's customers, actively pursuing other people's customers. So that is comparable to the fish nets. You have an existing business, customers, in this case the fish, and you're coming in and you're like swooping in and trying to steal those fish. So the halacha is you're allowed to advertise. You can advertise with the intention of your competitors, customers, seeing your advertisements. That's something that you can do and they can do. The Gemara talks about, we saw in one of the sources, that you can give out incentives, you can give out candies and things like that, because the competition can respond accordingly. They can also do the same thing. So it doesn't really make anything unfair. competing with non-Jewish businesses, it's a discussion, but the poskim seem to say you should be stringent about competing in an unfair manner, undermining existing non-Jewish businesses as well.
Stringent meaning that...
Don't do it.
So you need to be at least as careful as with the Jew as with the non-Jew. I mean, at least as careful with the non-Jew as you are with the Jew.
Yeah.
Even more careful, more stringent.
Because of Chil Hashem, you mean?
I don't know, that's what I'm asking.
That would be a consideration.
You just said that you need to be more stringent.
Oh, not more. I'm saying equal. You should... Oh, I mean that even though there's room to say that you'd be allowed to do it, you should be stringent and not do it. Even though there might be arguments to say, well, it doesn't apply to a non-Jew and therefore I can knock him out of business. Poskim seem to say don't do it.
All because of Chil Hashem?
I think halacha. Chil Hashem is another consideration.
As far as advertising or giving away something, what if you could give away something that the other person can't? Are you allowed to?
That's considered competing. Like you have a couple of times sitting in your store, right? That's a Rosowski story.
Yeah.
Or if you're Jewish, so now all the Jews are going to come to you, and they're not going to go to the one guy who's not Jewish. He can't do that. He can't become Jewish.
No, I'm saying, let's say you have an inn, you make something that they don't make, and they have no way of getting. Are you allowed to give that away?
Well,
take a price. You have an inn with the company that you have a price that is unbeatable.
Right, we'll get to that. But it doesn't have to be the identical thing. It has to be that he could do something. The Gemara actually talks about a different thing. It has to be something comparable. So if he could match, in general terms, he can match what you're doing. You gave out this, he'll give out that.
You have to be able to see that they could do something like that?
You have to figure that it's practical. If in fact, we'll get to that, I guess, but if in fact you can do something that you know they can't compete with, then that's an unfair practice. That's not okay. So it's only because of the...
That's a good example of that. Right? It's a perfect... I mean, he was right. I mean, no one can compete with that and ride in their hand.
No one else could be the Chavetz Chaim. You have to know in business what that translated to. If in fact that translated to everyone going there.
Well, that's what it did. He could offer Lashon Hara at his store. Right? What's that?
Well, he could offer Lashon Hara at his store.
Yeah, I don't think he could, though.
No, but somebody else could. Somebody else could have a falafel ball so that everyone would run there instead of the Chavetz Chaim. What?
Yeah.
You never know.
Do you sell water at a normal price in the airport?
Huh?
Do you sell like water and drinks at a normal price in the airport?
Could you sell?
I
probably could. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. We're going to talk about that now. Cheaper prices. Okay. So the halacha is that if the prices that the new business are charging are cheaper than other products, the other prices, or they're offering a better quality merchandise as long as the pricing isn't predatory. So it's got to be significantly, less in a significant manner. You can't like undersell the guy by one penny. But if you're offering a deal that helps the public, as long as it's not like really predatory, that you're really just trying to kill the other guy and wipe him out of business, then it's okay. And the same is true as with better merchandise. So the Beis Yosef says, so the reason why with the money, I think, is that charging less is like what we saw in the Gemara, that is that Chazal really put an emphasis on the public good over the individual businessman's parnasa. So if this applies even to someone from a different city, someone from a different city can come in and offer cheaper prices, because it serves the good of the public that it's going to lower the price for everybody. The argument for better merchandise, the Beis Yosef understands, because it's a different product. Widget A and widget B, when widget B is better, they're not all widgets. This is better. It's a different thing. The Beis Yosef argues that the same thing would be true if it's worse. It's just a different product. It's not called competition when you're selling a different product. Now, what happens? So again, we're saying this interesting rule that if you could charge less money, since you're serving the public good, that allows you to compete, even in a way, even when you're not normally allowed to compete, you're an outsider from a different city. What if, as a result of your prices, this is where Walmart comes in, you're going to put the other guy out of business? What about that? We saw earlier that even when you're allowed to compete locally as a local, there's a limit that if you're going to put the other person out of business, you're not allowed to compete. What happens if it's serving the public good? You're coming in, you're Walmart, you have the economy of scale, and you're offering, you could charge less than what anyone else can charge. It's not predatory, you just can do it, and they can't. And it will put all the mom and pops out of business. Are you allowed to come in? So that's actually a machlokas.
They do it on purpose.
Huh?
They do it on purpose.
Who?
To put everybody out of business.
It could be, but they're not, they may do it on purpose, but it's not at a loss. I mean, they profit from, they're not undercutting everybody and then raising
that's
the,
not
and,
their,
then,
that's
and then,
not their goal.
It's good business. They're not jacking up their prices once they put all the competition out of business. That's their price. Okay, it's a machlokas if you're allowed to undersell even when it puts the competition out of business. So you could ask a shaila, but really in general, whenever we have a doubt, I'm not saying this is doubt, whenever there's a doubt, you can do whatever you can do it. You're allowed to do it. No one has a right to tell you stop. Because I hold, like, I'm stringent. I'm not stringent, I'm lenient. I have a right to be lenient, and I can do it. If the rav you asks holds, like, the stringent opinion, then you can't do it. So ask.
They have a margin of 1/6. That's the margin you're supposed to sell. And if they're selling at less than 1/6, then you're putting the other guy out of business.
Well, if it's
on not. Allowed, he can't make a profit if he sells it for pennies. This guy can, because he has a lot of pennies to sell.
Right.
So you're putting out of business. The person should be prohibited from doing that.
It's a machlokas, because on the other hand, the Gemara does say that there's a value in the public good, and you're saving everybody lots of money.
Ozala. I mean, not an expense to put somebody out of business.
That's machlokas. It's not a machlokas. What takes precedent? What takes precedent?
What can a consumer do? I mean, can I go to Shmuel's store because he's selling something at something that the other store can't sell, but it's going to put him out of business? Because I'm going to buy all my stuff from him, because why wouldn't I? I'm buying something for 50 cents from him. This guy's charging $1.50.
You want to know if it's your obligation to...
Do I as a consumer have any obligation,
right, that's one of the,
not to help that guy?
That's
that
one of the questions on the sheet coming up. Yeah, we'll get there. Okay, we'll get there, Mr. Shem. Okay, different products. If the competing store is going to sell many products at the... This is also a Walmart question. If the competing store sells other products that the other store doesn't sell, also it's okay. So... if you have, a supermarket and you have a market that sells whatever, the milk and eggs, et cetera, and then a new one wants to open up, and he's also going to carry paper goods, he's also going to carry stationery, so then it's fine. Then he's allowed to compete because he's offering a broader selection. So even though he's competing on some of the products, and there are details that we worked out with the pricing of the various products and things like that. You have to ask a child, but in general, there's. Even though there's direct competition on a large part of the product, but if they're offering a considerable number of products that the first store is not, that itself justifies the existence of the second store. For more details, ask a shaila. Okay.
You can use that fact to actually try to take the other store's customers.
How would you do
like
that?
Say, we like have an advertiser. They carry milk and eggs. We carry paper milk and eggs.
I don't know. I mean, it seems to be okay. It sounds like not such a nice thing to say, but you could certainly emphasize what's good about you. To emphasize what's bad about the other guy compared to you, not so sure. It seems to me technically it would be okay. It's just not so nice, but maybe. I don't know. Ask me at this Kashana. Okay. Business districts. This gets into what Rabbi Ostofsky was talking about in Brooklyn and things like that. So the Gemara does talk about in a place that even people from outside the city who are normally not allowed to compete are allowed to come and sell in town on the market day. The market day was the day when everybody would come in and from all over the place, and they would sell things there. And part of the svara is that everybody knows it's a market day, so everybody comes there from all over the place to buy. Also, so it's the whole market is different. It's not like you're competing for the local business and we're vying for the same business. On the market day, everybody comes in to sell. Everybody from all over the place comes in to buy. And so
that's the way the city got stuff also, it was to their benefit also. I think during market days, the city might not have all these fruits and vegetables and whatever from all over the place. They all is the way they got their food and got their goods also.
Okay, but even services that may have existed in local stores, but when there's a day where people come from all over, so then outsiders are allowed to compete in those same industries. So
this day that would be like a convention center where they have like that feel, like all the.
Well, so they compare it to also the districts in Manhattan, the Diamond District, and things like that. But they even compare it. There are those that want to compare it to you know 13th Avenue and to Central Avenue in Long Island, where if you have places where there's tons of stores, and because there's tons of stores, everybody comes there to do all their shopping. So really, everybody is like built into that. That the competition itself, or the prevalence of stores itself, creates enough commerce that really everybody gains, and certainly doesn't kill anybody's business. So
yeah, I think they had like an electronic show in a convention center.
Yeah.
Where like now everyone's coming to this place, and you know you own the electronic store down the block from the convention center. They put had a good place to put your store, but you do. So that I mean, even though you could buy everywhere, but now everyone's going to that one place or a gun show. You have gun shows all over the place around. Bob's Guns, could they complain? How can they have a gun show?
No, it's more like what you're saying. Sometimes all the antique shops open up all in the same neighborhood. Yeah. That way everybody gains because everyone's coming to the same neighborhood for
right.
antiques.
Right.
Well, somebody coming in.
He could go to the show too. I don't know.
Yeah, but he doesn't want everyone going to the show. He wants to sell his guns in his
maybe
shop.
Not. Maybe not, because now he's going to get 50,000 more customers.
People in the same neighborhood. Right. Right. But I was signed. He says, come see me.
So you have, what about for circus, they have all the street guys selling their local Australian, like right outside of Eichler's on 13th Avenue.
Yeah.
So, on one hand, you go into Eichler's, you can get the what? In the short minutes to sell, but that's the show.
The same. It could be all the same arguments.
They're all doing it at the same time. Upline. Nobody had the business a week before.
Okay, so let's move on. But it could be that opening up a business so we're talking about if you live in Passaic, you want to open up a business in Brooklyn. It could be in Brooklyn. It's the kind of thing where there's enough for everybody, and everybody gains from everything. So it might not apply. But I don't know if you want to. If you live in Albany, you want to open up in Buffalo, so you might have problems. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Internet and mail order stuff. So now they say nowadays that competition between websites is okay because again the market is so huge that no one's really hurting and it's just almost unlimited. Mail order businesses who market to all over the place so they can do business anywhere because I think the argument is that you're not really competing perfectly with the local stores because they have an advantage over you that people who want to try stuff on and look at things in person, they have that. So you're not considered a direct competitor. You may be offering the same stuff at a cheaper price, but they retain some advantage.
What about the internet businesses that tell you to go check at somebody else's showroom and then come to us and buy it for us?
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
that has
point, what obligations does the consumer have? Can I go into this store to try on stuff and then go buy it online?
Right. So I think there are two arguments. I don't know. The person can talk about it. It might be very unethical to do that. But there's a counter argument to that, which is that it could be the stores want you to do that because they're hoping that once you're there, you'll buy it or buy something else or whatever. Impulse buy. You'll see something else that you like that you didn't see online. You'll buy it.
Maybe that. But if you see what you like that you can get for $30 less online.
You have to wait 24 hours to get it from Amazon Prime, so can't wait 24 hours.
No, it's an Amazon now.
2 hours. 2 hours.
Not everything. All right. Fine. Okay. Two more things. Fine. With yeshivas and things like that, competing yeshivas. So Chazal, we saw this in the Gemara, if we got that far. Chazal applied the rule here of kinas sofer and taiba chachma that it's actually considered a very desirable thing that there be competition when it comes to Torah and mitzvahs, because that makes everybody up their game. And that if as a Rebbe to succeed, to succeed in my job, I need to be better than that guy, and he needs to be better than me, and we go back and forth, that makes everybody do better, and that makes more Torah, more Chachma, and more mitzvahs, and more spirituality for everybody. So they're all bets are off when it comes to competing with yeshivas and things like that. Shul, the Rambam talks about shul. We'll talk about that in the questions if we get that far. I just want to end off with one thing. So these are more or less the overview of the halachas. When it comes to Midas Chassidus going above the letter of the law, so there's the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, he says like this. He says it's a Midas Chassidus, meaning it's a saintly thing to do. Not to compete and cut into somebody else's livelihood. Like the Pasuk says, we saw this in one of our sources, that the Gemara actually compares it to defiling another person's wife. It's considered a very, very bad thing to do. And so he's saying that even though you're allowed to, it's better not to. And again, where that applies to might be only when you're not destroying his parnassah entirely. It might not mean costing him a few dollars. It might not mean costing him thousands of dollars. You have to know where it applies to. But there is an idea that it's worth avoiding. And the Rambam says that it describes the way a Jew conducts themselves in business. He says, a Talmud Chacham, says, Maso matano shel Talmid Chacham v'emezimun, that the way a Talmud Chacham conducts his business is with truth and with trustworthiness and with trust in Hashem. Below Yerid l'toch umnes chavero, he doesn't cut into his friend's business. This is a description. This is the way a Jew, a Talmud Chacham, conducts himself in business. He doesn't cut into his friend's business. V'im shu'os tekalamaisa me'elu chiyotze behen, and somebody who conducts themselves in business properly, so about him the Torah says, v'yomer li avdi ata Yisrael ha'shebachas bar, Hashem says about him that you are my servant Yisrael that I glorify myself with. That when Jews conduct themselves properly and justly, so then Hashem says, I pride myself through you. This is a beautiful thing. Okay, so let's discuss some of the questions on page 7. Where am I here? Okay. Somebody want to read? Want to read the first one, page 7? There.
Here. After many years of employment at a property management company, a senior executive left the company in order to open a competing company using the methods and techniques he'd learned during his earlier employment. Additionally, he capitalized on relationships he had developed there to build his own clientele. Is he in the right?
Right. So this happens a lot. What do you think?
Like a lawyer taking his own clients.
Contractual obligations were to his employer. I mean, it's very possible that they said you are learning specific trade secrets from us, and therefore can't you agree not to compete against us using those trade secrets.
Right. It's actually they're both good points. The question is really in the absence of a non-compete. Right, but even that that's something we have to get back to. What is the binding nature of such a clause? How is that binding?
What do you mean?
Let's skip to that.
Because then you can be sued.
Okay, it's binding.
You should know the United States depends how intense. You know, in other words, there the courts actually in the United States say if it goes too far, it's too restrictive.
Yeah.
The whole thing is worth.
Right, you can't stop something from making a living.
Yeah, right.
You
okay.
You can't open up a business within 100 miles. That doesn't work.
But how is how
about how the boss treated him? Did the boss treat him well? Maybe the boss was over the. So I'm not paying you much. I'm only giving you a portion.
Okay, that should be relevant. But it's a very interesting discussion. How is that halachically binding, a non-compete clause? I'll skip to it a little bit. It's not even so related to these discussions.
Then it's like you're stealing.
Because, you know, look, we're talking about secular court, and injunctions can come from a secular court.
Right.
But if I'm going to employ Rabbi Katz to do something, and he's going to get access to trade secrets
right.
that are mine,
right.
can I write an employment contract? A halachic
right.
employment contract
and says, you can't do this. You can't solicit my customers, now I introduce you to. You can't solicit my vendors. You can't solicit, you can't do any of this. You can't use any of these methods that I use to make my business work.
Right. So, I'll skip to number 12. Number 12 is really about this, that if I make a contract where you're exposed to secrets and I tell you can't share, or the discussion I saw discussed was somebody took a course and they took a course about whatever, some technique, and the deal was you don't share the information you're taught at the course. So what's the binding nature of that thing? So the poskim say that you can't really own knowledge like that. You can't make a person sign a contract that they can't share that knowledge as terms of a contract. You can't do a kinyan.
Why can't you say, I don't want to pay you? You're working for me. I don't want to pay you if you're going to do this. So I'm afraid, all the money you took, as I paid you for a couple of years, I said that if you're going to go share my secrets, then I never had to ask to pay you.
Right, okay, so it could be like that, where the payment is conditional. The Chassam Sofer actually talks about a case like this. There was a shochet who taught somebody how to shecht, and they had a deal that he wasn't going to share whatever he taught him with others. And it's like the flip of what Lefkowitz is saying. He was paying the shochet for the right to for the information, and he signed like a non-disclosure on the information. So he says the signature, the contract isn't binding as a contract, and he promised not to, and a neder in writing. Really, I think it was non-binding. But what he said is that it's part of what you pay him. Part of the deal, part of the payment agreement, what you pay the teacher or the instructor of the course, was not revealing. And so by revealing it, you've actually failed to pay what you owe him for a service. You're stealing in that way. But in this case here...
Is this a service?
No, not really. No, it's kind of off the topic, but it's loosely related and interesting.
That's okay.
It's fine. So but there are, these are peripheral things. So in terms of revealing proprietary information, there's an interesting Gemara that the post can bring. There was a family that had a technique for how to do something with bris mila to make the kid healthier and not get sick or die. And
sterilized instruments.
Right, right. Maybe it was something else too. I don't know. They had something that they did, and it was a secret, and that was their business. They had a parnasa from this medicine or technique that they did for babies, and they had a monopoly on it. And Rava revealed it, except for one part. He revealed it to everybody except for one part of it. So they bring a proof that you see that proprietary information really is called stealing, because Rava only revealed it because of a public health need, and even then he reserved part of it that obviously wasn't critical to people's lives. But you see from there that information isn't something that you could just give away like that. It actually is a form of stealing to give proprietary information. I don't know if everyone agrees to that, but that's a proof that they bring. Now, another aspect, there's a number of aspects in this question. Another aspect was poaching customers, right? This is what this guy did. He opened up a business, and he poached the customers of his original business. So that, the poskim say, poaching customers directly doing that is the equivalent of the fish, of the fishing nets. And we saw in Rashi that when you have customers that are as good as yours, and when you have consistent customers like this original business presumably did, I mean they did because I made up the case. So when you go and you poach, you take customers that are not, they don't already own their business. You don't own their business like you own your car, but it's as good as yours. It's like Rashi's fish, that they're as good as yours. And when you come in and you take those customers, so that is stealing. And the post can say you might even have to reimburse financially for some of the loss.
What about he's not stealing all of them.
Right, but according to Rashi, it doesn't matter. According to Rashi, anytime any customers are done deal and you take them, it's a problem.
And Rashi,
we're machmir for both opinions, Rimi Gash and Rashi.
What do you mean poach? You mean tell them come to?
Well, that's what he did. He chased them down and he pursued them actively. And
but have an advertisement where you're playing with their mind.
But he could also do that, right? Here you come in.
I'm your salesman. You always come to this. You go to the law office. So you always come to me. I'm your lawyer. But now I'm starting my own law business. Come with me because you're always with me. So you come with me. I'm stealing the customer who's in this law firm. It's not the same thing as I advertise and say, I'm selling something.
He knew inside information. He knew how to get them. He went directly after them. He had the relationship.
You're not,
It's almost be a dime that you take the customer, and this mamish happens all the time. Now, what about and the competing? Just opening up another business in the same sphere. So that's comparable to the flour mill, and like we said, we paskin lenient that you're allowed to compete within the same business. But there are poskim that say, like we saw in the Rama and the Rimigash, that if your competition will undermine the first business entirely, so then it's a problem. If you are competing with a business that you have all their inside secrets, you know who their customers are, you know what they're charging, you know what they're offering them, and you could beat them, and you're tactically, you know exactly where to get them on every front. So the place can point out, in Chas Yitzchak, they point out that you really could destroy their whole business. So in such a way, if you're going to open up a competing business and do it in a way that you're going to mamish destroy them, so it's a problem. Sorry?
If I was restricted both ways, so it would be a problem even if you're seeking any of their customers.
Well, we're saying multiple arguments on different points. So, right, in terms of stealing customers, that's that problem. In terms of competing in a way that would undercut the entire business, is also a problem.
If there's no clear halakha on what can be done there, would I be able to? So, Katz is doing stuff that I think he shouldn't be doing, and there's no clear halakha that says, yes, indeed, he's wrong. Could I then go to a secular court and seek out an injunction against him?
I don't know. I think my.
Because I know we're not supposed to go to a secular court.
You have to go to a Jewish court first.
And get permission.
They said that they can do anything.
If you put it in the contract to begin with, so
you could put that in the contract that these certain matters could be.
I mean, talk to Joey because sometimes
the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Okay, the post-game talk, the one thing that they mention is that there's a pasuk in Mishlei that speaks very harshly about repaying good with bad. Somebody who worked for a company, and not like Dr. Pollack was talking about the treatment that he received at the company, assuming he was paid on time and properly and treated like a mensch, it's an additional element that to go out and compete in a way, even if everything else is okay, but to go and compete and hurt a company that took care of you and treated you properly all these years is ethically dubious, and it's something that the Torah speaks very harshly about.
The other way, though, wouldn't be a problem. There's no issue there if the guy actually did like a.
I didn't say that. There are halachic problems, but dealing with halachic problems, it would be you don't. It takes it's one. It's another factor. Sticking it to somebody who was a mensch to you all these years and took care of you and gave you parnasa, and then you go say, you know what, take care, and go hurt them. But the poskim do say, on the other hand, you can't be overly restrictive either. This is the business that he knows, right? So you're going to say to the guy, sorry, you can't compete, you can never do the business of it. The poskim say that there has to be some kind of fair arrangement where for a certain number of years, you don't take any of the customers from the original business, after which all bets are off. There has to be some kind of fair functioning way that I can continue to practice the business that I know in a fair manner, and if that ends up taking some of the original customers at some point, then, you know, so be it. You have your chance to keep them, and if that's what happens, that's what happens. Okay. Do another one. Somebody want to read number two?
A fellow doctor refers a patient to you for a second opinion of his diagnosis. After confirming the diagnosis, the patient expresses interest in your treating him rather than his original doctor. Do you accept him as a patient?
Okay. Right? You go to a doctor. This happens also a lot. Go to my father told me it's happened to him. A patient came to him for a referral for something, and they like the experience, and they want to come here. So my father said nothing to him. But what's the halacha, right? What's the halacha? What do you think?
For us, it'd be send them back.
Huh?
For us, it'd be send them back.
Send them back, right? What is the halacha? He's come. Another doctor sent him to you for something specific. Second opinion.
Open heart surgery. One doctor says you should get it. The other one says not to. Would you like the second one? Okay. Then you have to go back to the first one.
I don't think that's the case. You just like his bedside manner. You say, forget the oath. I'm going to keep coming to you from now on.
Me and Bayas, we have competition. We share patients with them a lot. But you go to their office, you're there for 3 hours. You come to us here for an hour. You know, we're more personable. We deal with them much better. They would want to stay with us.
Well, also, too, it protects you because...
What do you do? Send them back?
What's your address?
Responsive to all things.
You're doing the same thing. In other words, you do the same thing, but you want an opinion from somebody else who might give you a different opinion.
Yeah.
But they also could handle your work, too.
Or my father's situation was that the doctor was on vacation, and he sent his patients to my father as to fill in for an emergency. Right. And they liked their experience, and they wanted to come back to him. Do you take them back? It's, you know, ongoing treatment. So the Chasam Sofer says that any time customers on their own, without any unfair solicitation, decide to come to you, there's never a problem. The case he's talking about was that there was a Jew who bought the rights to sell schnapps in a certain feudal land, and he paid a lot of money to the head guy in charge to have exclusive rights to sell schnapps here. And all the Jews in town went to the guy from the neighboring town to buy their schnapps from the guy from the neighboring town. So he came complaining, you know, I have the rights to this. The second Jew, the other guy next door, the guy from the next town over, shouldn't sell to my customers. They weren't his customers. They were people in his town that he had the rights to, so to speak. Now, Chasam Sofer said that there's no such thing. He didn't do anything. It's not his problem. He didn't do anything. They, for whatever reason, chose to go to the second guy. That's their choice. So technically, they have a right to do that. But
the answer is what Bruce is talking about. Does we have a customer have the obligation not to create the problem, right?
Well, this is different. This is his question is where one business is competing unfairly against halacha, is that my problem? This is where no one's competing unfairly, but
well,
does he have...
Town.
He didn't move in. He stayed in his own town.
The
people went.
The customer went.
Right.
He didn't do anything to do that.
Right.
He is still doing it. He's still doing it. It doesn't make a difference. I didn't do it. They don't like this guy's schnapps. They're going to come by for me.
That would be different. It has to be the same schnapps. Whatever it is, for whatever reason, they like that store better, whatever it was. So that was their choice. The schnapps would have to be the same. If it was different schnapps, it would be a different product. It would for sure be okay. Okay, fine, but the poskim do speak out that the proper thing is, and the menschlich thing to do is to tell him, you know, your doctor is really, he's great, and if he is, and
so
go ahead.
Lie.
What?
He's supposed to lie.
If he is. Now, if they persist, so there are two additional reasons with a doctor why you should see the patient. Number one is there's a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says that there's a halachic svara that not everybody, in terms of the way Hashem runs the world, not every doctor can cure every patient. It's got to be the right one. It's not just better doctor, worse doctor. Sometimes it has to be certain doctor that's going to heal you, or certain doctors that will heal you. So, for all you know, you might be that guy. You might be that doctor. So even though maybe the first doctor is good, maybe he's better than you, but maybe you're this person's doctor. So if he persists and says, no, I like you, maybe for all you know, you might be the one who can cure him and not the first one. Also, the Rush in Bava Kama says that a patient has to have a certain comfortability with their doctor for their treatment to be effective. So if the guy really has it in his head that I don't like my first doctor anymore, I really like you, and he's adamant about it, that itself might be a reason medically why you're better suited to treat him.
If there's any reason why, like Gedalia's case, where you know the other doctor that sent him to Dr. Balak and Dr. Schwartz is a 3-hour wait, and they know that, I mean, they didn't pursue the guy, but now the guy says, you know what, I like coming for 1 hour. They don't have to then say, you know, should go back to that guy? Because there is a reason.
It might still be mentioned. The post can speak out that if the first business is like being derelict in their duty, so then it's okay to compete. They talk about, maybe we'll get there, maybe not, but they talk about taxis picking up customers from bus stops. So one of the arguments that's made is if the buses run late and they're over full of people like they often are in the Haredi neighborhoods in Israel, where there's like people hanging out the windows, so then they're being derelict in their responsibilities to the customers, and then there's no problem competing. So I would think that in certain fields, that's the norm, though, sitting in an office 3 hours. I don't know, but if it's considered abusive or not good to the customers, so then maybe you have every right to compete. What are you doing, keeping people waiting in the office for 3 hours? Okay.
Back to the public good.
Right, and that also comes up in the bus case. Okay, we have time for one more, maybe? We'll see. Number three, somebody? Any volunteers? Okay, so we'll do 3 and 4.
Four I think is very successful in that.
Okay, let's do 4. What's 4?
Your synagogue wishes to increase the amount of shekels and appropriately to pursue members of another synagogue. The corollary question to that is, I decide that I'm a rav and I don't, you know, I think that Rabbi Haber is not such a great rabbi, and I'm going to go and I'm going to open up a shul across the street. Am I allowed to go after that as opposed to just going after other members of an existing shul? That would seem much more comparable to what we're talking about.
We have a lot of guys at Bob's Gun Shop. We have a lot of guys that patronize guns at Bob's Gun Shops.
Right. Rav Moshe talks about that case. Let's see if I can remember what he says. In terms of taking members, so the discussion in terms of taking members revolves around the financial aspect. So it's not really so much the ethical aspect. We're talking about the halachic aspect.
Are we presuming all shuls offer the same product?
Right.
We were talking about before that it's one gashnap, it's different gashnap, so then it's different products. One shul and another shul are often very different products.
Talking is a good example.
Singing.
Everyone's talking
in the
shul.
Sephardi and Ashkenazi, but what about if we're trying to get somebody who's not so from across the street to come over here and be more from?
I suspect that's very different. What? That's probably within the guidelines of that. We're talking about two shuls that are both frum. You're just trying to get more people. So the way it's discussed is that basically if the members of the shul give money that goes to a fund that supports the poor people in the shul. So by taking members, you're hurting them, and the rav's salary by taking away members, you're cutting into the rav's salary. So in terms of halacha, the post can talk about it in terms of the financial impact on the poor and on the rav. Now we talk about making a competing shul. So that the very contemporary post can talk about. I'm not totally clear on the. It's not like very strongly sourced, like clear sources. But Rav Moshe talks about it, and later authorities even talk about it. They're really not so into it.
I once interviewed for a job a long time ago.
Yeah.
And the job was, we want you to be a rabbi of this shul, and we want you to get all the members from the other shul to come and join this one. That was the job description was written. There was they named the shul down the block, and maybe they took all the members to begin with 200 years ago or something, but they said, you know, this was your job. And I said, you got 90% of your members don't come to shul, maybe I'll work on them. No, your job is to get all the members from there to come here, which the rabbi came in and did.
All right.
Just sharing.
They talk about, the contemporary post can talk about a kolel, opening up a competing minion, and they speak against it. Even fast and slow. Even fast and slow. They said if it's like really much much slower and it's important to them, they should make not a competing shul. They should make a separate minion.
The times are different.
A separate minion in the shul if need be, but not to undermine an existing shul. I can't tell you if it's halakhically sourced so much, but Rav Moshe and the contemporary poskim are really not into trying to undermine existing institutions.
It's about opening up a work corner, where on Shabbos it's no competition, but during the week it would be, theoretically. There were people living out there.
I don't know. I mean, it could be the same thing. Maybe you can compete when it's not competing, right?
Yeah, opening a kollel on a larger stipend.
So kollel, that would be kinah sofrim, probably. If you're just taking the people, you're not actually making more chachma?
Is that more, there's no, it's like, but you have two yeshivos.
Yeah.
Then they're competing for the children. But when you have like two,
if there's stipends, there'll be guys, basically. So then more people will come.
maybe that's the source why our guys should not be davening the yeshiva, by the way.
would it be less of a problem?
For the record, the kollel doesn't do that. When they're not here, they're at home.
I know that.
If you're taking from the old shul, from the other shul, you're taking not the people who are really so much support, important from a financial support, but the regulars who are there. And by taking them, it's not going to really make any difference to their balance sheet.
Right.
But it might make it so they struggle or make a mistake.
Right. So again, halachically, I don't know what the source would be for that. The halachas that we're dealing with have to do with finances. But the postgame, again, I don't know where they're coming from, or Moshe, and is very strong about not doing that, even when it's better. I mean, they talk about different nusach. You wanna they daven nusach svard, you want to daven nusach ashkenaz. He's like very against it. He says, really don't do it. If you have, when it's not talking about a Baltimore or Lakewood or Brooklyn, where there's so many people that you throw up a shul, you'll have people, theoretically. It's talking about where, and in a situation where it's going to take away. Yeah, I mean, that could exist in some places. Even in the big cities, it could exist. But in a situation where you're going to take away from people and you're going to hurt an existing institution, it's very, very frowned upon. I don't know where that's sourced in halacha so much. And, it could be it's understandable to have your own nusach. If it's not competing, we don't see that there's specifically an emphasis. Everyone should try to make one giant shul. And there's different people, like different times, different styles, different speeds. There's room for that, but not at the expense of something that exists.
Similar to the dentist's office, if the clients want something different, but they only have one thing, so if something else opens that they want, but they shouldn't be allowed to go to the other place because they're going to hurt the one that they're currently at.
Yeah, that's
like the dentist. If he wants the other dentist, but he only has the dentist that he's at now because it's the only one there, or like a shul.
No, it wouldn't be their problem. It would be the people starting the shul that would be the problem. Not the.
So if they're opening a show that everyone else wants, that's they're not allowed because they're competing with the
current
show?
Yeah. That was the story. That was the shot that posed her much. Everybody wanted it, and he said not to do it. Okay. Right. That's number 10. Number 10. Let's skip to that. Maybe we could stop there, and if anyone's interested, we can do more at a different time if you want or something. Or discuss it privately. So number 10, a new store opens in your area, unfairly competing with existing businesses and pushing them out of business and with ridiculously low prices. Do you shop there? This is what Bruce Byrne was asking about. What's the obligation of the consumer in terms of this? So the Maram, this is one of the big tshuvas that discuss these issues. Really interesting, Shaila. The Maram, Mayor Katz and Ellenbogen, printed at great personal expense a new print of the Rambam. This is back in the 16th century, a new print of the Rambam, and he partnered with a wealthy individual, helped him print it, and there was a non-Jewish investor who was insulted that he wasn't engaged in the deal, and so this non-Jewish investor printed a new set of Rambam himself. He printed it, and he sold it at a loss just to destroy the Maram, and the Maram was probably not wealthy to begin with, and he invested all this money, and this guy came in and just sold, printed them and sold them for nothing, just to punish him for not including him in the deal. So the Shiloh at that time was, this is where a lot of copyright law comes in and things like that, very interesting. So the Shiloh is posed to the Ramah, the Ramah himself, or Moshe Isserles, and he writes, amongst other things, that consumers are not allowed to buy it. And one of the reasons is, Hasagas Kavul. In other words, Rav Moshe Isserles applied a limitation on the consumer from going to businesses that compete unfairly. On the other hand, the Shailas and Tshuvas Nachal Yoshua writes that, and if you look around, you really only find in the Gemara, etc., and early postgame, you really only find the discussion of Asagas Gvul in terms of the people making the businesses. You don't find the discussion anywhere early prior to that referring to the consumer at all. So he says the opposite. He says that it's a halacha that binds businessmen, not customers, and it doesn't apply to customers. So what you should do, I don't know, halacha l'maisa, but it's a disagreement. It's a
machzik yedoy
of ravera. I don't know how that applies. I don't know how that applies.
Meaning what happened if somebody was over at a school? Are you not allowed to support it?
Yeah, that's what we're saying. That's really, it's a machlokas. It seems to be a machlokas. Yeah.
I mean, this guy specifically, priced his product in a way with specifically the intention.
Absolutely.
He didn't care about business.
No, he's for sure a rotten guy. But now you have two sets of Rambam on the shelf and one's half price. What do you do? You have to.
Shkoyach.
I don't know.